Welcome one and all once again to Dual World in episode 57. This week, there wasn't that much news, at least not anything positive out this week. It was a bad week to be a Japanese developer.
Or
THQ.
When isn't it a bad week to be THQ?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming they've had some good weeks. It just hasn't, it looks like it's not going to be a year if they make it to the end of it. But we'll discuss that when we hit up news. But before we get there, let's introduce who's here. We have Anthony.
What's up, guys? I'm a little bit sick, but you can... We'll make it. We'll make it through.
It's actually viral marketing for Darksiders 2. He's presenting death.
My voice acting.
Please, 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 please tell me that the viral wordplay there was intentional.
Yes, it was.
Okay, good.
And, well, hopefully Darksiders 2 comes out, but again, we'll get to that in a bit. We have Daniel.
Hello.
We have Chad.
I'm sick as well. Sick of all of you.
Oh,
that's not very nice.
Not hungover.
Put some ice on that burn, kids.
And we have Jason.
Hello. I'm not sick at all.
Well, that's except for your addiction to coffee and caffeine.
That's not a sickness.
Listen, you can't stop yourself.
Jason, addiction is a terrible, terrible thing.
This is almost as ironic as Chad giving you that speech on procrastination this past week.
My hypocrisy knows no bounds, it would seem.
But yes, this week we're talking video games. Like I said, there wasn't a lot of news, and there actually wasn't that many major demos out this week. The only thing of note was the Twisted Metal demo hit this week. Did anybody have a chance to check that out?
I don't think you got it at all, because the weird censoring stuff that they're doing with that game over here, which is stupid. And I don't have a PS3 anyway, so that's kind of more relevant to the point, isn't it?
Yeah. Just a little bit.
I mean, I guess I would say anyone who checked it out. I checked it out real briefly because they've been having issues with the online for most of this week. You can't connect to games and stuff like that. And I really tried off the offline mode just to get a feel for the controls. And I have to say, you need to take a degree in gameology to understand. Like, they use every single button in that game for something. Like, you know, most games kind of do that. But like, even like the four directions of the D-pad are used for something different. So, it's weird because it's a racing game, and, you know,
there's certain... It's not like they try to do much with the limited controls.
Yeah, which kind of can become a pain. You would think that you'd build the game around the controls and not the controls around the game. But, what was I going to say? It's like, one, it's a racing game, and you kind of have like, these standard set of controls that you expect from certain games. And the fact that the gas isn't on any of the trigger buttons, but it's on square.
Oh my god, that drives me crazy.
What?
Oh wait, it's square? Okay. Oh yeah, no, square, yeah. That's retarded. At least make it X, right?
Yeah, that was my first assumption. If it's not the triggers, it would be the button at the bottom of the controller. But no, it's square. And then X is for like a handbrake. And then circle is break. And then I think triangle is switching. It's triangle. I forget. But then R2 and L2 are your weapons. L1 and R1 cycle through your weapons, your various types of weapons. Up on the D-pad is like there's like you have a rocket, you have a shield, you have a mine, and you have something else all attached to the D-pad. And then, like, of course, you move with the analog stick, but you... What is it? You move with the analog stick to do a turbo, you have to push the analog stick up twice. To do a reverse turbo, you have to push the analog stick back twice. I don't know why you would ever need a reverse turbo, but it has one. So there you go. So yeah, it uses, like, everything in that game, and that's kind of... It's off-putting to me, I think, because it just seems like too much to remember, especially since like it's not really standard uniform controls for a racing game.
What happened to keep it simple, stupid?
Apparently that's not what this game is going to do. This is one of those.
It's supposed to be an arcade game. It's supposed to keep things simple. What?
Yeah, they're kind of. It seems like they're. Yeah, it seems like they're kind of just going all in on their hardcore fan base or whatever. But I don't think that Twisted Metal hardcore fan base is going to be big enough at, you know, anymore. Like, it's not the PS1 era.
Yeah, I was just to say, I think Twisted Metal is one of those type of games that you kind of, it has that arcadey over-the-top feel, and it should kind of control like that. It controls worse than some, I mean, and I'm not saying it controls worse, it actually handles pretty well. It's just that there's so much for you to remember. I think it's just, it would have made more sense to kind of keep it simple and make it more engaging instead of having like 50 of these things to do at once, because I can imagine you just kind of getting flooded your first time online with all of these buttons doing all of these various tasks. And I'm happy I actually did, the online wasn't working, because I did try to start that up and then it wouldn't let me connect, because I wouldn't have guessed the button combinations that they had in this game off the back. So yeah, that's Twisted Metal. I think the demo's up for the next 2 or 3 weeks. The game's out on the 14th.
Wait, a time limit demo?
Huh?
A time limit demo?
I don't know if it's time limited. I just assume that the game's out in 2 weeks. Well, it's out in a week and a half, so it makes no sense to play the demo as much anymore. I'm happy that they're calling it a demo, not using it as a beta, as Sony's been known to do.
That's just what they want you to think.
Yeah. And yeah, that was it for Twisted Metal. Sadly enough, I don't think any of us have played Final Fantasy 13 too.
So I downloaded the demo. I actually have played it, and I played 5 minutes, and I was like, "This is just Final Fantasy 13 with everything fixed. I don't really want to play this." I'm not into Final Fantasy 13.
Can't be that different from Mutant Muds, can it? I played Mutant Muds.
How is Mutant Muds?
We'll get on that. I won't derail it just yet.
Okay. We talked about the Final Fantasy 13 2 demo before. And I haven't played 13 yet. But I enjoyed the battle system, and it seems like that was what they were focusing on.
The battle system was the strongest part of 13.
Yeah.
But it's, from, like, it felt like, to me, is if you weren't a fan of 13, 13 2 is not going to do anything for you.
If you were a Final Fantasy fan in general that didn't like the linearity of 13, and that was the off-putting thing.
And I was going to say,
which was
the off-putting thing
for a lot of people.
Yeah, for me it was more like the enemy design. I just got bored.
I was going to say the off-putting thing for me in this game is the monster collecting aspect of it.
And time travel.
I don't mind time travel. I mean, I'm a Zelda fan at this point. You kind of get used to it.
Yeah, no, that monster thing can fuck off and die twice.
Yeah, I mean, one, it's just it seems like a half-assed way to kind of do the game without having to redevelop a new character or any new characters. And the other thing is, it's just so odd because, like, they pretty much have one role throughout the course of the game. It's not, like, they kind of evolve, like, actual characters. So it's like, for example, Cat Sith is kind of just a basic healer, and that's the only role he plays in the demo. And from what I understand, that's the only kind of role he plays in the game. So, yeah, there's that. I mean, we shall see. Aside from Twisted Metal and the lack of Final Fantasy 13 2, what have we been playing?
I'm playing Half-Life 2 right now because there's some thing that people are trying to... Basically, we're trying to get as many people playing Half-Life 2 as possible so Valve can sort of come out with Half-Life 3 stuff. I'm not playing it for that. I just thought it was a good excuse to replay the game, to be honest, because it aged really well, and it's still fun, and I still don't have many complaints about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few games that do, like, physics puzzles so well that just work in the world just naturally, you know, they're not like, oh my god, this is a, you know, someone designed this puzzle. It's like game mechanic. It's just like,
going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I've always admired the design of that game.
Okay. What about you, Jason? What have you been playing?
Well, I tried to start Assassin's Creed Revelations, and I played maybe an hour or two and a couple multiplayer matches, but mostly I've just been on the Old Republic. Okay. Just so addicting. This is like my first real MMO, so...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, the game's really good, but it's bad for life.
Happens. It's one of the reasons. One of the reasons I don't play MMOs is I always feel like I'm obligated to play since I pay a monthly fee. Are you still on the, what is it? I think you get a free month.
Yeah. So I've only had it for about a week. But I mean, it's really cool. I guess you know, the basic structure is really similar to WoW, which I didn't have that much time with, so I don't know. But I like the Star Wars aspects of it, and I like the BioWare aspects to like the conversation system and the branching story paths and stuff. So I think it's a good mix and it's fun. And all the classes play like way differently. So there's a lot of variety on the from a gameplay and story aspect. So.
Okay. Anthony made mention of Mutant Mud, and yeah. How is
that? I've actually been cycling through a number of things, but I guess first Mutant Muds. I would say I'm a little over half. I'd say I'm a little bit more than halfway through the game, and supposedly the difficulty really spikes up towards the end. The basic gist of it is it's a Mega Man-ish shooter, or I guess platformer, that focuses on collecting 100 gems and pack and a gun to shoot the. Good for the 3DS is that there are essentially three levels that you can go to. You'll have your normal standing ground. You can eventually you'll find a pod that'll shoot you to the back of the screen, and then a pod that'll shoot you to the closest part of the screen. So it's really, really cool visually. it's worth checking out, definitely. There's a lot of charm, and it's fun. It is fun. But the others, I've been going through Rayman Origins. That's a lot of fun. We may have talked about it before, but four-player co-op is a blast, and they just did a great job producing that. A lot of charm in it.
Yeah.
Except for picking a release date.
Yeah.
True. You got that right.
And I also think that having a lack of online co-op was a bad decision.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, for what it's worth, it is still a really, really good platformer. And if you're a fan of the genre, you need to check it out. The other two, I'm going through Portal 2. I didn't get a chance to play it when it came out last spring, because, you know, finals and whatever. So I beat the co-op with a friend at Texas A&M, and now I'm finishing up the campaign right now. And, you know, it's as good as everyone says it is. It's awesome. And the last one, another 3DS eShop title, Zen Pinball. I haven't really played through a pinball game in a while, but this comes with four tables, and just the most compelling thing about it is the online leaderboards. So if you have any friends on your friends list that have the game, it's not just checking like a leaderboard and seeing where they are. It'll tell you who you pass up while you're playing. Like, for example, you beat the Earl of Awesome just now, and, you know, and keep going. So
that won't happen, though. But
yeah, it won't happen because you won't ever catch up. Anyway, it's fun, you know, it's pinball, and it's addictive in short spurts and addictive in long spurts. So those are the four that I've been messing around with.
Okay. I was also going to say that Zen Pinball is available on like everything. I think I have it on my Android tablet.
Yeah.
I believe it's available on the 360 and I think PS3. So it you know, it is a fun game if you want to check it out. It's kind of everywhere. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is that, you know, I like that Nintendo's kind of supporting the eShop, but they really need to kind of advertise these things.
I mean, that goes for all their digital stores, you know.
Completely agreed, but the quality in what they've been releasing so far is, you know, been such high caliber that they're getting the advertisement from different press sites. I know IGN's doing a lot of coverage on it, so, I mean, I'm not disagreeing. Of course, they need to advertise it. But for the people that are looking, they're finding it. They're interested.
Yeah, and I mean they did advertise it. I think Freaky Farms had an actual commercial. But yeah, like stuff like Freaky Farm, Pushmo. This past week they had Sakura Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more. I think they're supporting this more than they did the eShop on the Wii or the DS. But they actually need. You know, it's nice that they're kind of out there putting games up so people can find it. But they kind of do also need to say like. Look, we have these games out here, so go find them so other people know. But yeah, it's interesting. I wish they would come up with demos of these. I know they started doing retail demos, but I think eShop demos are just as important.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And apparently they're coming with more retail demos in their Nintendo Zones and their Best Buy starting Monday.
Well, they have some now, and I think that's really backwards. Is that I think you can go to Best Buy, and there's something like 15 demos on the unit.
Well, I mean, you can download it to your own. You bring your 3DS in there, and
Yeah, but that's what I mean by that's backwards. You shouldn't have to bring your 3DS somewhere to get demos when it connects to the internet.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's cool when it's like a bonus thing, like a special Pokemon character or something. You know, it gets you in the store, but...
I think the Nintendo Zone is an interesting idea because, one, I think a lot of what Nintendo's doing with the 3DS is trying to get people to carry it around, which is a smart business decision.
Yeah.
But the thing, there are some things, like if you go to Best Buy, like I remember the first time I connected to Nintendo Zone, I think it was like $5 or $10 off Mario Kart 7 or Super Mario 3D Land if you connected and showed them.
Yeah, I think you had to buy both. You got $10 off.
Which, and then I think it was like 50% off certain games recently, which is a nice bonus for you if you connect. And like now you can buy, I think you can get Pokemon episodes, which I still think is kind of backwards, but having to go to a store to get demos for a game, you should be able to get, you know, like if you go there and it happens to be there, that's cool. But if they're keeping these from the shop, I don't know why they're available. They're there. Just put them on.
I'm sure there's some kind of deal that they've struck with Best Buy by Best Buy hosting that. I'm sure that they have some type of exclusivity contract to some content.
And we'll get into this a bit later on with Resident Evil 6, but I said it before, I still think the idea of exclusive demos is stupid.
I agree.
But we'll get into that in a little bit. Chad, what have you been saying?
I've been playing a lot of StarCraft lately. Do you want to hear about that?
No.
Okay.
No.
One of these days, I'm going to get a yes to that question.
Maybe when Heart of the Swarm comes out and you have a legit excuse to talk about it.
Oh, I'm talking about Heart of the Swarm. That's a thing that's happening.
But then when that comes out, you have our, you can talk about StarCraft then.
Oh, we're dedicating an episode to that shit. I don't even care. But anyway, I played the Syndicate demo.
I played that.
That's totally a shooter. I got frustrated halfway through and shut it off because I was...
Do you think I should pitch to write that guide? When you played,
I it was.
How do you feel about shooters? Because I kind of don't like them anyway. So
no,
that's
well. The thing about shooters is that they're fairly straightforward enough to where I can do it. Like I wouldn't be able to write a game for a fight or a guide for a fighting game like Soul Calibur. But for shooters, they're pretty straightforward and pretty easy to do video content for.
What was the original Syndicate? I know it wasn't a shooter.
RTS.
But...
RTS. Yeah.
Oh, then they definitely didn't get the spirit of that in this game. I was going to say that it also seems like the co-op and the co-op and the actual single player are two different types of games. So it might
be. You see gray things with gray things.
It's not gray. It's extremely blue. It's actually extremely busy too. There's everything going on the screen.
It's extremely boring as well. I don't like the demo at all.
I do kind of like the give and take between your co-op partner where, like, you can refill their health and stuff like this.
Yeah, but as far as I'm concerned, it was just LB. LB. You press LB when the game tells you to, because something good happens.
Yeah. And the thing is, it has such a huge range, too.
Yeah.
granted, I'm not...
You know, the boss is press LB while somebody else shoots at him.
Yeah, that was kind of annoying, though, because he drains your health, and then he just downs you, and yeah, that was frustrating. But yeah,
I need a reboot. That's all you hear playing the Syndicate demo.
Yeah, it's the worst. Terrible.
Anything else, Chad?
I played so much Beat Hazard. So much Beat Hazard is so good. It came out so
audio surf, but schmuck.
Exactly, and that's baller as shit. Because. That's most of what I listen to is like electronic music anyway, so it's kind of the perfect game for me. I'll just sit there and kind of zone out and play Beat Hazard for 6 hours and then be confused as to where I am and what time it is, because it's so good.
Spend much of your life like that, though.
It's been out for so long, and I don't know how I have never played it, but yeah, it's basically just a dual joystick shooter. That does the audio surf thing where it uses your music to make you have a seizure.
Oh, really? I didn't know it uses your own music.
Yeah. It's pretty, I think there's a demo up on Steam, and if there isn't, there should be, but I'd recommend checking it out for everybody, because it's...
And B has fairly cheap as well.
Yeah, and it's on sale, like, every time there's a Steam sale. And speaking of Steam sales, I accidentally bought Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
this is the problem that you bought it.
Wasn't it like $5 or something? Then?
Yeah. This is the problem with Steam sales. I mean, it's like, no, even if it's a bad game, you feel obliged to pay that little for it.
I was a little tipsy and like, oh, you know what will be great? I'm going to buy this and then make fun of it and it's going to be hilarious. And now, I don't know. It's Duke Nukem, nah. So I'll play it eventually. Maybe I'll do something for the site. We'll see.
Well, I've already done my review of Duke Nukem.
For Duke Nukem, the game of 2011.
So, I think that's everything. I played a whole lot of Solitaire also, because that game's really fun.
That's a timeless classic.
Minesweeper is really good also. You know what? Actually, no. This never gets said and someone's got to goddamn well say it. Minesweeper is so good.
It really is.
Everybody needs to play
For Minesweeper. How simple it is, it's a really...
Yeah, no credit. Video game
If you have a Windows phone...
No love for Minesweeper, man. It's what kind of world do we live in where you can talk about video games and Minesweeper never gets dropped? It's bullshit.
Well, frankly, there's been no DLC for about 7 years.
Seven? More like 17.
Yeah, their post-release support is poor. Although, they haven't had to patch it. That's one of those few games that comes out and hasn't required any patches to work. Bethesda? I'd love to play a Bethesda Minesweeper. You click on a square that's already clicked on, and then, oh, you blew
Bethesda
up.
Minesweeper,
no reason.
Bethesda Minesweeper, you need to mod it to get it to be any good.
Yeah, just
and if you play on PS3, you're fucked.
All of a sudden, the block you want to click is halfway up a mountain, and you're like, how the fuck did I get there? I don't know.
You're playing on PS3, you want to plant the last flag, but the game just crashes every time.
Yep, that sounds right. So yeah, Minesweeper's pretty good, you should all play it. And I think that's the end of my, what you've been playing.
Okay.
Side note on that, actually, if you have a Windows phone, which I don't think any of us do, but there's a version of Minesweeper that has achievements. So.
Achievements.
Oh god damn it, if Minesweeper had achievements, I would never leave my house.
Well, I was happy when Bejeweled got achievements, but moving on. I finally finished up Xenoblade, which took me forever and a half. That was, I think I tracked in at just shy of 100 hours in that game.
Earl, should people buy Xenoblade when it comes out in April?
Yes, they should. And hopefully at some point, hopefully before this is up, I should have my review done. I've been working on it all week. It's really
it's
hard.
It's a long game, so.
Yeah, it's hard. That's what, I'm like 1,000 words in, and I'm just talking about the setup to the game, like the background and the story. I haven't even touched on the gameplay and the characters yet. It's a really refreshing RPG. I think the biggest thing I can compliment it for is it streamlines a lot of what makes RPGs tedious to people. And it just rewards you for everything, which is kind of that Call of Duty mentality where it's like, ooh, I walk 5 steps, I get 10 XP. But in this game, it kind of does work, at least for me. Like, you get XP for exploring, you get XP for battles, you get XP for quests, you get XP, you know, like, there's achievements in the game, and each achievement unlocks a certain amount of XP and stuff like that. So, yeah, by the time you beat the game, you're like a level, I think I was like level 82-ish. And then you can kind of do a new game plus, and then there's a ton of monsters and enemies, and special, or what they call unique monsters, which are kind of like, boss battles on the maps, and that goes up to level 120. I'm not gonna do those right now. I think putting 100 hours into any game is kind of more than enough for me the first time through, so I'll give it a break. The other game that I started and finished this week was Alpha Protocol, which was a game I picked up on a whim when Best Buy had it for like $10. It didn't review as well, so I was kind of iffy about it, but I'm happy I picked it up and played it.
Is it one that's underrated?
Yeah, I'm probably not going to get the best reaction to this, but I think it out Mass Effect, as far as...
Blasphemy!
As far as using the dialogue tree, I think it does a much better job of it than Mass Effect.
Really?
One, it's not a binary, this is a paragon or this is a renegade choice. It's not good or evil. You tend to have three options. It follows the three JBs. You have the savvy, which is James Bond. You have the professional, which is Jason Bourne. And then you have the aggressive, which is Jack Bauer. So, you know, you have that.
This is the perfect game for you, basically.
Well, it is, I do have spy stuff, so that kind of helps. The other thing is that because it's not, you know, you don't have, it's not like, oh, you're always bad, you're always good. Because of that, every character reacts differently to how you act. So you can't, if you go through a game just being good, not everybody's going to be a fan of that, because some people are going to think you're a pushover or a pansy, while other people will kind of, you know, kind of come to your more aggressive side if you push that out towards them. The other thing is, like, every decision kind of has some type of feedback, some of it immediate, some of it later on in the game. Some of the choices you make, for example, like almost every major villain in the game, you can choose to kill, execute, or bribe.
What's the difference between kill and execute?
Kill, keep them alive, or bribe them. There we go. I spared everybody because there's an achievement for playing through the game and sparing everybody, and there's an achievement for killing everybody. If you spare everybody, like later on, the first guy you spare, if you spare him, his terrorist network kind of aids you later on in the game. But if you don't, they kind of become enemies towards you. So then you'd have double the enemies to fight in certain stages.
Pro tip, you should probably save that guy.
Well, you can, but I mean, you also get different stuff. Later on, there are missions that you can't open up if a choice in the game contradicts it earlier on. And then there's certain stuff that even if you do within a mission, that changes the outcome of a mission or the information you have. Like there are, like you can gather information on characters, you know, through contacts and speaking with people. And like for an example, there's a boss battle. I didn't want to say like the third to last boss battle. That if you don't have enough information on him, you can't bribe him. And if you don't bribe him, you can't get a mission after that because he's the one who gives you the information to finish a certain chapter, and you'd only have the option to kill him. So you'd be missing out on that. And that's the thing, is like every decision you can kind of see where it would take you, because you can kind of see like, oh, if this character was alive, you know, like maybe this wouldn't have happened, or if I hadn't aligned with this group, because you end up aligning with several groups along the way. The plot is kind of iffy, but it is a spy thing. You know, it's about an organization that's seeking to start a fake war so they can, build up their capital. But it's actually going to turn into World War III if it happens. So your whole agenda is trying to take them down from inside. And stuff like that. I do think the game's rough around the edge technically. Its shooting is terrible most of the time. You know, you get skill trees, and I pretty much invested in stealth and my pistol. So by the time you have like 3 or 4 levels in your pistol, you can do what they call a skill shot, which if you've ever played, Dreadstone, the James Bond game, is basically when they freeze frame the screen and you target somebody and then it just instantly shoots them for you. That's how I took out most of the bosses. I love stealth, so I had no problem with that. I played most of the game stealthy. At times you do get busted and then, you know, like everybody will kind of running on you, and that could become frustrating because I don't like shooting. But sometimes they were also pretty dumb. I had several occasions where the enemies would kind of just keep running into a wall, and I did, you know, like I'm not gonna break it, but they wouldn't do anything but run into the wall. So, and it goes at random times. Like you'll be walking, and it just has like a 10-second loading screen, which I thought was odd. But if they ever did make a sequel to this, which I doubt they are. I think it's a great foundation to build on, and I'd like to see that, you know, kind of taken forward.
Yeah, I don't think it's sold enough, right? But which is too bad, because I always found the concept interesting, too.
Yeah,
and even just taking a kind of the Mass Effect-type framework and putting in a completely different thing, like a spy story.
Yeah.
All the other things that they put in, I always, like, that's a game I'm going to play at some point, too. I just haven't really found the time.
That was the other thing I liked about the improvement over the Mass Effect system, is that your choices are timed. Because, you know, with Mass Effect, you can sit there for like 5 minutes debating.
Can't you interrupt people mid-speech as well?
You can discern this, because there's the three basic actions, and then there are times when you get a fourth option, which is usually a physical action. Like, there was one time I was interacting with somebody, and the option came to just punch him. So I did that, and it just kind of, he's like, shut up, and then he just punches you midway through your sentence. So yeah, that happens. The fact is it's timed so that you kind of pose. So you know, like, sometimes at Mass Effect, and Noir has this as well, like you get to pick, and you just sit there waiting.
Yeah, you get an infinite amount of time to go over your decision, yeah.
Yeah, and then the person just kind of sits there staring at you, blankly. This is kind of like, you know, you have a time, somebody's going to finish their speech, you better have your answer ready. And it does throw right into it, so I do like that aspect of it. That's Alpha Protocol. Okay, so now we can get into news. And, I mean, there's not a lot of news, but there's so much of what there wasn't, if that makes any sense to anybody.
Nope.
Yeah.
Okay.
What but, it was, there's a lot to talk about regarding it.
Well, I mean, this, the big thing this week was it was a lot of ends of financial quarters, so we got a ton of financial reports. And like I said, it's a bad time to be a Japanese developer. Sony lost $2 billion this quarter, which at first I thought was for their financial year up until this point, but it's just for Q3.
Is that that Sony the whole company or Sony PlayStation?
The company. Sony and Microsoft kind of have this where they kind of hide their gaming division in other branches, so it's always hard to kind of pinpoint it. But Sony did end up using money on the PS3 this quarter. They just don't say how much. And
I would think, though, that they're probably losing the most on the films, right? Because...
No, I don't know. I don't know if this counts for their film division. Actually, I think what they ended up using the most money on is they sold
the
their stock... Yeah, they sold their stock in the LCD thing, and I think that was like $1 billion write-off on its own. So that's half of their losses. Part of it was also the weekend, which is what is affecting a lot of Japanese companies.
They also bought out Ericsson.
Ericsson doesn't count for that quarter, I think.
Oh, really? Wasn't that?
I don't know. I don't know, but yeah, it doesn't count. Ericsson wasn't part of their losses for this quarter. It's a lot of things that they have on that seems that I think they make very few. They make a little bit of money in very few departments. But they did announce that Kasarai would become the CEO and president of Sony. Altogether, he's formerly.
To be honest, who didn't see that coming?
You see, here's the thing, and I, you know, it's probably just my. Is that this guy been in charge of the kind of the face dance your brand for the last 6 years, and you're gonna put him in charge of your entire company
when they lose? Well, immediately after they lose $2 billion.
Well, I mean, they have to make some changes. I don't think investors would be happy if you lost $2 billion.
Ridge Racer!
Yeah, that guy is now the president of the company. And
any guesses as to what his salary will be?
I bet he's not cutting it in half like other CEOs losing money.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
It sucks that everyone talked over the punchline of that joke, but Anthony, well done.
we've apparently been butchering a lot of your punchlines today, Chad.
Well, I mean, you're kind of punching them right in the face, the punchlines, which is unfortunate.
It is what we do. But yeah, I mean, on the bright side, he came out, he said, these are my goals for getting Sony back on track, these are my four things, and most of it's like, we just need to trim the fat. And I'm kind of curious what this means for like, the PlayStation 4, because I don't see that being a cutting-edge system.
I think it has to be.
I
know people say that a lot, actually, because of how much money they lose, but in every business Sony's ever been in, that's all they've done.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that he was saying, is that we can't just be known as a company with cutting-edge hardware anymore. And I think that's the problem. It's like, you can have great top-of-the-line hardware, but if nobody's buying it, you're not doing anything.
But, like, I think we would have seen that with the Vita then. And the Vita And, you know,
exactly
if they have, they can afford to have a PS4 be cutting edge, because the PS3 is still going to be around, and then it slides into the lower bracket.
Yeah, but if we're 5.5 years with the PS3, I guess 5 years with that quarter, and they still are kind of iffy on making a profit with that. I can see them eventually turning a more steady profit with it, but it's 5 years and they're not really making money with that device. Cutting the price isn't going to help them. It might sell more units, but they're going to end up using more money. So yeah,
are they not making a profit yet? I thought they have been for.
Like I said, this past quarter they didn't make a profit off of it.
They're making money on the hardware though, so I don't know.
No, they didn't say how much.
I don't know, but ever since the Slim came out, that was selling for profit, so they can't be losing now.
But they said they were losing in their financial statement. I mean, I assume what happened was because they dropped the price this August 15th.
Oh, right.
and they didn't sell as many as they expected to sell, that's a combination of why they didn't make as much money. Yeah, eventually, I assume the PlayStation 4 PlayStation 3 is going to be heavily kept around until like 2014 for them to kind of break even on it eventually. But yeah, I just see that their focus should be on a modest bump in graphics and then trying to push as much software as possible. Because as a gaming division, that's where most of the profit comes from. But, I mean, we shall see. I mean, this is just hearsay, just reading in between there, between what he's saying. But yeah, he's the guy who, you know, pioneered the PS Vita. So to him, our PlayStation brand may be just as important to them. But I don't necessarily buy that anymore since we got news last night that they're renaming the PlayStation Network to Sony Entertainment Network. And to me, that sounds like they're trying to kind of brand the company as one thing instead of holding it under the PlayStation umbrella.
See, to me, I see that. And that I see that as them preparing for a kind of combined service across other media.
Well, we've already got
they can't really say PlayStation Network if it's going to also be on Bravia TVs bringing the movies on demand. You know, like PlayStation anymore then, though. PlayStation means games.
But that's what I'm saying. Even when they branched out, when they had the PlayStation Suite on Android and stuff like that, they still kind of kept that brand.
But that's because that's specifically relating to games. And yeah, I don't think the PlayStation brand's going away for games, but I think the Sony Network is going to be more than that.
I don't think it's going away for games. I don't think the PlayStation brand itself is going to be as big of a focus for the company going forward. Because, you know, before it was like, you know, we had this PlayStation Suite, and that's kind of the march into Android and stuff like that. And they did that because the name in gaming is big, but I don't think they're going to be pushing that as much. I think they're going to push the entertainment, you know, field or aspect. But, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that eventually somebody in the company gets a direction for them and kind of sticks with it, because the entire company seems to work on this model where you just throw stuff and hopefully something sticks. We shall see. We had the news of Resident Evil 6 demo coming with Dragon Dogma. If I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
I think if you buy
it 2 months early.
You get it in July.
Well, if you buy it on 360, that is.
Yeah, if you buy it on 360, you get it in July. If you buy it on PS3, you get it in September. And I said this at the start of the podcast. I've never got the idea behind an exclusive demo. Like, I guess it helps if you're Microsoft. Like, maybe people will buy it on the 360 because they had 2 months extra. But from Capcom's point of view, it's just that you're limiting half of your user base to not playing this game.
Well, it's got enough of a, it's got enough presence, it's got enough known that, I mean, Capcom's publishing the game that's coming with Dragon Dogma, right?
Yeah.
So what they want, I mean, I've never heard of Dragon Dogma, I'll be honest. They want to raise awareness for Dragon Dogma by placing that demo with it, and that's what it's done.
Oh, I have no beef with that. My beef, again, is the fact that it's like, then you're kind of encouraging people to buy the 360 version, and kind of like, the PS3 people aren't that important.
I think there's also another way to do it where you could offer, maybe extra DLC for Resident Evil 6 or something like that. Because I agree with Earl, it kind of defeats the point of it. Like, a demo is supposed to help sell your product. You shouldn't be limiting who has access to that.
And you shouldn't be using a demo to sell another product, either.
Well, I have no beef with it selling another product. I mean, it's a time-tested procedure. I mean, they've done it with movies before. I'm sure everybody's seen the movie that came with Star Wars Episode 1. I have no idea what movie it was, but people went out to the movies to see that trailer, and that movie got that bump, and it happens now. Like, companies attached to big movies. The Dark Knight was attached to, like, Sherlock Holmes and Mission Impossible 4.
But you can still go online and watch those trailers.
Oh, yeah, you can, but it does get people to the cinema to see those trailers. And, yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to a movie just to see a specific trailer, though.
Oh, people do.
But that's not because they can just go online and watch it. Like, there's no real incentive to do that.
Well, there is in some cases. Like, I went to Mission Impossible 4 IMAX because I went to see the Dark Knight Rises prologue. I would have just seen Mission Impossible in theaters if not for the prologue, which isn't online yet. So it does still kind of work if it's done right. Granted, I'm also a huge Batman fan, so I'm a big crazy guy. Yeah. But yeah, I have no beef with selling, using your demo to sell another game. It worked with Crackdown in the Halo beta. So there's no, it's the idea that we're gonna sprint to our user base by saying that the people on the 360 get it 2 months in advance, and the people on the PS3 can wait that 2 months because they just aren't as important to us. And speaking of, you know, content for new gamers, we had two things from EA on online passes this week. First is that Syndicate won't have an online pass because, according to EA, it's important to not create that barrier between the game and its consumers.
That's bollocks. EA don't give a fuck.
You're kind of taking it out of context, though.
Okay, what did they say then?
Well, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but
there's no quote that EA could ever put out that would defend it, because it's just gonna be contrary to everything that they do with the games that they do give an online pass.
No, because okay, here's the difference. Syndicate is, for all intents and purposes, a new IP, and we know how much new IPs struggle, and there's an incentive for EA to. You know,
so what about Kingdoms of Amalur then?
Well, Kingdoms of Amalur, I mean, you get a DLC quest if you buy the game new. I don't have.
It's not. Well, it's not DLC.
It is DLC. It's not on. It's not on the disc. It's a download code.
But if it's like, I don't know, 106 kilobytes, the DLC is not. The content.
No, I know. Well, at least one interview I saw with one of the producers said it was a download code. It's not on the disc.
But going on another game like
Battlefield, the multiplayer is what sells a game like Battlefield. Like, most people are buying Battlefield for the multiplayer. So if they're buying it not from EA and still taking up those services, you know, it's fair for EA to say, listen, we want to cut. This is our game. We're providing you with all these services. For a game like Syndicate, it's a completely different situation because it doesn't have the awareness of Battlefield. Like, it's gonna struggle to sell.
But then we're just gonna come into a circle again, because Kingdoms of Amalur doesn't have the awareness of Battlefield, but they're doing it anyway with services they're not providing because there's no online for that game at all.
There's a significant difference between barring online play.
Everything on the disc. You're missing nothing. You have everything. If you buy it new, you get a bonus. So I don't. These are three completely different situations, and SSX is a fourth one, which is I think the most interesting example, because it's kind of tweaking the formula instead of just we're gonna have.
Before we get there, I found the quote, and this is what he says: "We want as little resistance or barriers to entry as possible."
Speaking specifically about Syndicate.
Yeah. The co-op is equal burden in this. We wanted everyone who owns a copy of this game to have an access to the entire product. That is EA's quote.
Exactly.
Is that EA
co-op
or is that
such an important part of that game, so they can't bar you from it. I mean, even look at the demo. Co-op is the only option it gives you. They're obviously trying to push it, so putting that behind a online pass would just be foolish.
But isn't that the same thing he just said about Battlefield 3? Is that online multiplayer is the sun aspect of that game, and they put that behind it.
But
Battlefield 3 was going to sell no matter what they did with that.
And that's,
where Syndicate, they need to incentivize you to buy it, because new IPs just get bent over and nailed in the market these days.
Okay, so for what I'm getting from you two is that having no online pass helps the game sell. But if you put an online pass, it should be a game that sells anyhow.
In EA's mind, they want to have an online pass in as many games as possible because it helps them get a chunk back from all the used sales. This Syndicate is the exception to that rule because they want to put an online pass in it. I mean, don't get me wrong. If they could do it, they would.
This is a successful game, and Syndicate 2 comes out, it'll have an online pass. But this is a calculated business move
Someone sat down and said, okay, we're going to overall do better with this game by not having the online pass than we would if we did. So I agree that the quote is not like, oh, we want to do this to prevent barriers between gamers. We want gamers to enjoy the game. We don't want to whatever. They're doing this because it's whatever analysis they've performed tells them that the correct business decision that will ultimately benefit them the most in the end is to not give it an online pass.
Okay.
That was very well articulated.
Well, I can't wait. I can't wait for 6 months' time where EA is complaining that Syndicate didn't sell anything.
I think Syndicate not selling anything is going to have.
I know it's a different situation, but I just can't wait for them to complain about it.
I think Syndicate's going to be not going to sell well because of Syndicate. The demo really didn't impress me, and I don't.
It seems like it doesn't really have that much marketing behind it so far.
Well, I mean, the game's out in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any TV spots. I don't think I've even seen a banner ad on a game website yet.
Well, they're waiting for the Super Bowl. That's why.
That would be a huge boost for them if they got a Super Bowl commercial. But are they spending that kind of money on it?
Fuck no.
I wouldn't spend it on Syndicate.
I think
I'd spend it on maybe right.
I'd spend it on Mass Effect 3 commercial.
I would like that.
I think I'd rather sit down and watch the Syndicate announcement trailer for 12 hours than play that game for 12 hours.
Okay. But the other thing we mentioned is the online pass for SSX. And this is what I originally said when these things first started popping up, is that I prefer a system where you don't necessarily abuse the people who buy it used, but you kind of reward the people who buy it new. With SSX, everybody has access to the full package of the game. You can do whatever you want. You can play online and whatever in the game. But there are, currency you earn in the game that you don't get if you don't have an online pass. And but it does keep track of anything you earn. So if you do decide that, you know what, I really need this currency and I need these boards or whatever, then you can get an online pass and you can get everything you've earned. And if you buy it, you have that code, so you get it anyhow. And this doesn't hurt anybody. You get the full experience of the game. But if you want that little extra, or if you're struggling, you can buy this online pass. And I think that's the system that I support. Not saying, you know what, we're going to cut out half of this game for you because you bought it used.
Well, let's not forget. I mean, online passes are still an incredibly new thing. They're going to go through some growing pains.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is EA's, like, looking at it and saying, okay, we'll try this and see how it works. And if this is the direction they go in the future, then I'm totally okay with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't necessarily hate the idea of online passes. I do think it's stupid to have a barrier of entry for new, you know, there's that entry, and then there's the fact that not everybody has an online connection. I think even now, like, Xbox 360 still has those 60.
Well, listen, if you don't have an online connection, then this isn't an issue anyway.
Well, for this game, but stuff like Kingdom of the Amalur.
But again, that's a downloadable quest, so it doesn't matter. You're not getting it, regardless.
So you're saying that it's okay for you to miss out on a game because you don't part of a game because you don't have an online connection?
You're gonna miss out on it anyway because it's a bonus game. It's DLC, a part of the game that you obtain through an online connection.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Though it's like, so you're saying that's right. For the person who buys it new to miss out on that stuff because he can't connect online.
Here's my perspective,
the
right?
But what I'm saying is that the person who buys it new, the person who spends $60, doesn't get the full game because they can't connect to the internet.
Here's my perspective on it, right? If I buy a game for $60 the week it comes out, I want everything that was made during its original development cycle. If those quests were made during the original development cycle, which they must be if they're available day one, I want them, right? And if I don't have an internet connection and I'm being penalized, right, how is that fair?
Because just because it was made during the original development cycle
doesn't mean it can be
included on the disc. Games go gold a month, 2 months before.
During the main development cycle. There's no piece of DLC that gets completely made after the development cycle's over.
I'm sure there is some.
They need to have final code submitted so early to start pressing discs and shit like that,
it's totally plausible and likely that
most of this stuff is stuff that's had to be cut at some point.
They need to stop adding new content.
They continue working on the game three months before. Exactly. Yeah, so they
usually
take
more like six, so they have time to polish.
Yeah. Okay. So they take all of that and work on post-release content. So it's still during the dev cycle, so it can be ready for day one, but they couldn't have included it on the disc. And I think that happens in a lot of cases.
Okay, then let's go back a few months, because I don't think we really had this discussion. What was the excuse for Arkham City? That content was shown when the game was first revealed. That content was ready day one. But if you bought the game new, you couldn't get it if you didn't have an online connection.
That was
and even some people who did
mismanaged PR. not PR, mismanaged mark. Like, that was a situation where, you're right, they presented it throughout the development as something that was going to be there, and then...
Yeah, no, that's a case of just poor decisions on everybody's part. But
yeah,
you can't hold
if they
up
came
that
out and said in the beginning, this is a bonus for buying the game new, you'll get this too. That would have been a completely different situation than, hey, oh, by the way, that Catwoman stuff we've been showing you for a few months, yeah, you need a code for that now.
And again, it's not the code so much as the fact that you need online connection, and we know that content was on the disc. So it's not like it was something you had to download. It's just you have to access this, and get on that code for it.
And there are ways of inputting a code into the game without requiring an internet connection. There are plenty of them.
Such as?
Okay, how about this?
You cannot tell me that is impossible for them to implement a system in which a code is generated and then locally authorized.
If
PC games have been doing it for 30
okay.
years.
If it's unlocking something that's already on the disc, but we're talking mostly about things that you download.
It's half and half, because Catwoman was, again, on the disc.
But
we
that's
don't know.
One example. Anyone can pull one example to prove
okay.
anything.
But
and I'm not
just
saying,
only one example doesn't mean it's not going to happen in the future at all.
The post-release, you have to download it. I'm not saying that that's always handled perfectly. Arkham City is a great example of that being handled very poorly. But in the majority of cases, I think it's perfectly acceptable.
But you can't say the majority of cases. There's only been two games, as far as I know, that's had online passes for single-player content. Well, three. I guess Rage was one as well.
Did it?
It was really weird how they said it.
Its justification was even people who bought the game new could miss it completely.
Yeah, and that was kind of backwards. That's not the best way to sell your online content.
I need to finish that game.
Yeah, we've had three examples. One of them has the stuff on the disc. I have no idea where Rage is.
Rage was on the disc.
Okay, so two of them are on the disc. You buy it new, you can't get access to it because you don't have an internet connection.
Well, in that case, it's bullshit.
Okay. We don't know what Kingdom of Amalur is yet, do we?
It depends
yeah,
on how big the download file is.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So we don't know what that is. So far, out of the three examples, two of them have been released. Two of them have had content from the person who buys it new because they don't have an online connection. At what point does that become fair for that person?
What? I was distracted.
Oh, yeah, I didn't hear what you said. Sorry, repeat?
I say at what... Okay, so the person who buys it new, they go to the store day one, pick it up $60, they pop it into their system, they don't have an online connection for one reason or
okay,
another.
Okay, here's
have...
a question. Do they have that on the box? Does it say some content only accessible with an online connection?
I don't have Batman in front of me, and I don't own Ring. So, I have no idea. So, but does that just
if it says that, then fair game.
How is that fair game, though?
Because it is a disclaimer. Listen,
okay,
I really don't have that much.
Say you're doing it.
Yes.
I also
see how that's justifiable.
I don't have that much.
If I tell you I'm
going to
screw you over, and then you let me screw you over, it's your fault.
Right. So you have no. You said you have no sympathy for people who have no online connection.
I have very little. No. If they have no internet connection. But they're obviously spending hundreds of dollars for gaming. Like, I mean, there's priorities there.
Well, no, it's not necessary that they don't have a connection or that they decide to buy games. It's that there are still parts that don't have broadband connections and stuff like that.
And what if Xbox Live is down? What if your internet's down for 2 weeks because you're waiting for an engineer to come and fix it?
Okay, just for the record, I got my Batman Arkham City up. It's on the back of the box, really tiny print, hidden away behind two pictures. Activate your Batman Arkham City pass to unlock Catwoman as an exclusive playable character.
Hey, I also have clarification on Kingdoms of Amalur. This is from 38 Studios Community Manager. He says, for what it's worth, House of Valor content, which is the online pass thing, is not in the finished game or on the disc.
Well, there you go, okay.
Yeah.
It isn't there.
Community managers have never lied to the communities before, have they?
Okay, and just as an addendum to the Batman thing, nowhere does it say that you need an online connection to activate the Catwoman stuff.
Well, it says you need to use the online pass, doesn't it?
No, it says you have... to activate your Batman Arkham City pass. It doesn't say that's an online pass. It says it's a pass.
Well.
Yeah, and I really don't see where it says an online connection is needed.
Well, in that case, yeah, they just handled that really poorly then. I'm not saying that, like, everyone does it perfectly, because, I mean, we've only got three cases, and in one of those cases, it was obviously handled pretty poorly. But the idea itself, I don't think, is that bad.
I don't think the idea is terrible. Like I said, I support it if it's done like SSX. Where, you know, it's like you don't really...
Yeah, we should talk about SSX, because I think, you know...
You don't really hold anything hostage. It's just that, like, if you buy it new, you kind of get more from your package. Without really saying, like, this is, you know, content that you need. It's content that
I'm
you
I'm always trying to get more from my package.
And yeah, if people kind of support like, this, I don't mind it as much. But again, if you're knocking out parts of the game, I think that's when it becomes an issue. So, Jason, is there anything you want to say about SSX?
Just that, I mean, like we've said, the online passing is relatively new. So, you know, the publishers are still trying to kind of figure out what works best. And this is, I mean, the news about SSX came before Syndicate. So the SSX news was the biggest shakeup, so to speak, right, of the online pass that we've seen so far. And for those of you who haven't read, it doesn't lock out the online content. You can still play online without the online pass. But what happens is all the rewards you get after your online events, you don't get unless you have the online pass. But if you redeem your code later, like after you've played, or buy a code later, the game knows all the rewards you've accrued up to that point and will reward it to you at that time. So I think it's, you know, it's a different way of approaching it, and I think it, you know, it kind of gets away from the all the negative reaction, you know, we've had right now in the last 20 minutes, just of, you know, why do I have to put in this code? Like, why am I locked out of stuff that's already here? Like, I don't know. I think it's I'm interested to see how well it works for them.
I still think that it's never going to be a positive association with online passes. I just think this is just offensive to most gamers than anything we've seen so far.
I'm with that.
The SSX thing or online passes?
Yeah, the SSX thing.
Wait, did you say it's the most offensive?
I said it's the least offensive. Oh,
least offensive. Okay, I was gonna be like, what? This is mixed. Yeah, I mean.
No. It's a system that, you know, is kind of appeases everybody. I don't even think, cause you don't even need to activate your online pass to play the game. Which again kind of eliminates that barrier of entry. Granted, you still need to get the rewards, but you can kind of insert your game started and do whatever you want. And if you decide later on that, you know, like maybe after a week that this is fun, I'll get the rewards, you can kind of put in your online pass. So it takes away that barrier of entry for people, at least as far as starting up the game for the first time.
Something we should also talk about is, you know, Iwata's been talking about how the Wii U is going to have NFC, right? Near field.
Yes.
That's something where, I mean, for all we know, the next Xbox and PlayStation could have it too. But that would, I mean, take away the one thing with the online passes. Like, you know, if you have someone that buys it new and, you know, they get the code, but then it's like, man, it sucks. I have to spend this time to type in the code. I mean, that removes another negative thing from it too.
I
have to do is swipe a card.
Even think of it that way, but that makes sense.
Because that's the one thing where, you know, I've kind of defended the online pass on this podcast repeatedly, but I'll admit that's the one thing where it's like, that's the one thing that's changed for people that are buying it new. It's like, you would have gotten this anyway, and you still get it, but you do have to put in this code, which is a minor annoyance, but if you have an NFC system to just swipe, like, that would be good.
And this isn't just related to online passes. It's kind of something I've had issues with this entire time. It's a minor annoyance, but I still think that every step that takes away from actually starting the game adds up. Because in this day and age, it's not just that you insert a game and you start it. You insert a game, you gotta get the day one patch. Then you gotta activate your online pass. And then you gotta...
And you're signed into EA or whatever, whoever's, you know, proprietary login system. And then you've gotta do this, and then you've gotta do that.
And granted, I realize the PS3 isn't the most ideal connection, or the ideal system, but I've had times where I've put in a game and it's taken me nearly an hour to actually start playing the game between patches and mandatory installs and online passes. And that, to me, isn't fun as a consumer, because if I only have an hour to play, and that hour is wasted on me actually starting the game for the first time, then it becomes more of a hassle for me than it's worth.
And as I said last week, you know, the whole idea of just being able to put your disc in and play is why people play on consoles instead of PC, and, you know, you're slowly taking that away by with system updates and online passes and stuff.
And, that, you know, just as a minor aside to end this, I also hate mandatory installs on my PS3. Moving on, though. The last two aren't actually news things. It's just one is something that we kept on talking about on Twitter all week. And that was the difference between a editorial and review content for a site. This came about because I think Jason was the one who linked to it. The IGN had an article stating that they feel that Call of Duty for me is becoming still and needs to be shaken up.
Boring was the word that they used.
Okay, boring. And I kind of I take offense to that because if they had thought that's what Call of Duty has become, then they should have reflected that in their review when they would want people to buy it or not.
There are two issues here. There's the one, the fact that the person that wrote the review and the person that wrote the editorial are different.
Yeah.
And obviously, different people are going to have different opinions. But if you put it up on a website like IGN, people are going to take it as IGN's opinion, not that person who wrote for IGN.
Stupid people are going to think that, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, an editorial is by definition someone's opinion. So.
Yes, editorials are different, but it does kind of dampen your image when you're kind of like, oh, this is awesome, and then you have like your staff saying, you know what, this game is really just not fun anymore. And I get, and it happens. It's not the first time IGN or any site's done that. And it always seems to me like they want to have their cake and eat it too. Where it's like, we'll just have these very rosy, reviews, but then we'll just kind of say later on somebody will come across, you know, there's a fan base that also hates Call of Duty. That's appeased them as well.
Yeah, well, that's why I was going to say, you know, it does reflect the actual market where there's still a very large segment of people that, you know, it's not boring to them. It's still an 8.59 game to them, you know. But then there are other people who are bored of it. So it's kind of hard to say. When you're doing a review, you know, just because it's more of the same doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad game if it's still executed to perfection.
It doesn't mean it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with their score for Call of Duty. I haven't played it. But what I'm saying is, like, if you have somebody coming out on your site saying, like, I don't, like, this isn't the game that's fun anymore, then it's just kind of like, you know, and this is kind of why I used to prefer EGM where they had three reviewers.
Yeah.
Because then you kind of got, like, you got an overview of opinions. It wasn't just like, you know, one person said it's a 10 and then everybody else said it's a 10.
Yeah, that worked out well for them.
Well, that had nothing to do with the system.
And Game Informer still does it, where they have a second opinion, and usually, you know, for the most part, the scores are within range, but sometimes you kind of get some where like, you get like a 9.2, and then somebody else will have like a 6.75, and that kind of, you know, that does help you out, because then you kind of say, you know, like, maybe this game isn't right for me, what does he have to say about this? But with IGN, it's like, and IGN used to have that, they used to have like a second opinion.
They have second opinion sometimes, I don't know if they did specifically for Modern Warfare, but...
And I understand, like, you probably, not no offense, you probably wouldn't want to do something like this for Catherine because it's not that big of a game.
But shut your mouth.
But for Call of Duty, I would imagine that you'd want as many opinions as possible because it's not like people won't play the game. But, yeah, and again, editorials is what it is. It's people who have different opinions of stuff. Like, Jason does most of the editorial, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it reflects what we all think, but it goes up, and there's that. But yeah, it was just a discussion we've had on Twitter, and we figured it would carry over to the podcast at some point.
I think when you're writing a review, one tends to write it for the people who are going to read it. At least that's my philosophy. So
really? I wouldn't say that either.
If I'm reviewing Call of Duty, I'm writing that review for people who are going to read it, and if you're reading that review, it's because you're at least somewhat interested in what Call of Duty has done before. And for those people, this iterative style that they've been doing for the last 20 fucking years of Call of Duty is they're going to be fine with that. So I think in that sense, it's...
But the thing with that is, Chad, is, you know, a lot of what attracted people to Call of Duty in the first place is, you know, it completely changing how you do multiplayer first-person shooters.
And it still keeps people there. I'm just saying that
the function between a review and an editorial are kind of, they're directed at different audiences.
They are directed differently, but this falls into a whole different category, which I honestly don't think we have time for this week, is what is the point of a review? Like, for some people, like you said, it should be written for the audience who would want a Call of Duty to know what has changed. But to some people, some people see that as a reflection of there's always an issue, like, is it an opinion piece or is it more of an objective overview of the product? And I think
it's gonna be a little bit of both.
Yeah, that's what you want, but sometimes a lot of people, you know, sometimes you see complaints about this. It's like some reviews just kind of read, it's like a PR checklist for a game. Yeah, you know, now it has 16 players online and all these new pieces are awesome, which doesn't really tell you anything.
Well, it's just a poor review.
That is a separate
issue. It's a description of the game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I didn't want to get into it. It's like, because I think get into what a review should be or what a review is something that can take up a lot of time.
It could be a whole podcast on itself.
But yeah, so we won't get into that. I'm not saying it's a different writer, and I think that's one thing that people always need to keep in mind. And this gets on my nerves. I've mentioned this before on the site. It's a thing people do with reviews as well. It's like IGN gives Modern Warfare a 3, a 9.0, and then they give something like, if they give Resident Evil Revelations like a 6.5, so Call of Duty, it doesn't mean that it's better. It's not the same person who's reviewing it. It's not the same system. It's not the same priorities. It's not the same, you know, it's not the same taste. It's not the same type of game. And I hate when people are like, you know, this got a 9, this got a 6, so that means this is better. It could be better. Doesn't mean it's the same type of better.
That applies too
between like when Gears of War 3 came out, I think it got an 8.5 on IGN, or maybe it got a lower score than Gears of War 2 did, and people were freaking out, like, oh, this means that it's the worst game than Gears of War 2, and it's like, no, this is like 3 years ago, like, much has changed, you know?
Yeah, that's the other thing, it's that time, you know, time changes, what you expect from Gears of War might have changed, and it could be that it's still a Gears 2, you know, 9, but 3 years later, like, is that still good enough for a 9 in video games?
We keep talking about objectivity and subjectivity. Well, here it is. Objectively speaking, people are stupid. like most people you walk out of your door and meet today are going to be stupid. So there's that.
Well, it's not insult people.
But not our listeners. Our listeners are very smart.
If they're listening to us, it's because they are smart. And all you assholes who aren't, who can't hear me say this anyway, so I'm totally in the clear, you're the stupid ones.
Okay, now that we've insulted most people in the world, this final question, it was actually what I was going to open the show with, but we'll end it. And this is an ever-evolving format, we'll see how it goes, is that we've been doing this for about a year and a half. This is episode 56, roughly, you know, give or take. 57, actually. And I just, you know, figured it would be nice to kind of...
Oh, we've definitely been doing it more than a year and a half.
I mean, I think it was started right before E3 2010.
Okay, yeah, never mind.
But yeah, I just figured, you know, it'd be nice. Like, granted, you kind of hear us weekly. You kind of get our taste in games and stuff. But it'd be nice to actually have some stuff on the record. So we'll try to have, like, some type of question related to everybody's gaming taste or gaming habits a week. Just to kind of, you know, get to know them. And this week I figured, and this is a question I've asked on Twitter and on the site and on the forums, is like, what game got you into gaming? It doesn't necessarily mean the first game you played, because that might not be the game that gets you in, or hooks you, I should say. And since Anthony had to step out, one, he's dying on us, and two, he had stuff to do, his answer was Super Mario 64.
Ooh.
And I've asked this on Twitter, and you folks can think about it. I think Jason has his answer, because he's answered on Twitter. But it makes me feel old. No, it was Pokemon Blue, I think.
That doesn't have dialogue trees. I don't understand.
Huh?
I said that doesn't even have dialogue trees.
Well, Mass Effect, I think his answer was, okay, I haven't expanded, but I just want to give you two time to think. But I was just saying, it makes me feel old when people answer it, because a lot of people are answering Pokemon. I think, we'll hear Daniel's answer in a second. And I'm just thinking, like, these are games that I was continuously playing as a guy.
Well, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Then there were some people who were like Mousetrap on the Atari 2600 and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm not that old yet, so.
I mean, I think, you know, it's not like I didn't play the original Mario Brothers, the Duck Hunts, you know, the Super Nintendo games, but I mean, I guess I'm going into mine now, but Pokemon was the first game that I owned. Like, the Game Boy Color was the first game system that my parents let me have. So, it was the first time that I spent that much time into a game that I really thought, like, this is a hobby I want to do, you know, a lot. And then, in a similar way, I think Super Smash Brothers on the N64 led me to get my first console. And then later, it was actually BioShock that made me realize that I want to, like, work in this industry. So there's kind of multiple levels going there. Because I think BioShock, for me, was like, oh, games can be a lot more than just, like, a fun distraction of time. Like, there's a lot we can do in this medium in terms of, like, you know, storytelling or like intelligent commentary and stuff like that. So that's me.
Okay. Chad?
Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
That was another popular answer.
Yep. That was, that I played so much of that game and it just, that was not my first game that I played because that was Bubbles and Squeak. Which I think six people on Earth have played, but has maybe the most baller soundtrack on the entire Sega Genesis.
I was going to say, is that on the Mega Drive? Because it sounds familiar.
I was going to say that Sonic the Hedgehog 2 still has one of my favorite scores of a video game.
Yeah, I don't think that Sonic 2 is pretty good. If it had Sonic Boom, it would be number one for sure, but we can't have everything, I suppose.
So, well, I was going to say Sonic Generation has that, but
I haven't gotten that far yet. I need to finish that game, too.
But I count Sonic Generations along with Smash Brothers Brawl that it doesn't count for a video game soundtrack because it's kind of like a record best of album.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Is that it?
I thought you were like, that was like you were ending it by repeating the...
No, I was saying, I wanted...
Oh, yeah,
well, what was yours, Earl?
Mine's, I kind of have that.
Mario? It's Mario.
It actually wasn't Mario. It's honestly, what kind of got me interested in gaming is Captain N. Yes, I realize it's kind of odd to get into gaming with a cartoon show.
Didn't see that coming.
No, I've been a huge fan of Captain N, even though I've watched it as an adult. It's a really terrible show. But it's kind of, and I don't know if I mentioned this before. I'm actually from a huge family, so my older brothers were gamers and stuff like that. So they used to watch that, and you know, I always thought that having a controller that can actually control stuff was awesome, like your belt buckle.
Like click.
Yeah, like you can pause real world life and stuff like that. That doesn't happen. But the game that kind of got me interested in the game they used to play around me all the time was Castlevanias. So yeah, I've always kind of had that thing for Castlevania. I've never actually beat a Castlevania, but I've owned a lot of them. So I guess I beat Harmony of Dissonance for the 360, but that totally doesn't count. But yes, Castlevania.
I refuse to believe that that's a Castlevania game.
That's Castlevania in the title, so it counts. Yes, and then eventually I stuff like Super Mario Brothers 2 and 3, Sonic, and as you can tell, my taste hasn't really evolved in 20 some odd years, so there's that. And Daniel?
So I have two, and they're kind of really strange combinations. So it was Pokemon, like pretty much everyone else. You know, I loved my Game Boy when I had it, and I couldn't put the thing down. And then there was Age of Empires 2, and I the amount of time I spent messing around with the map editor in that game and just playing custom maps on the MSN Gaming Zone when I was a kid, man, it actually makes me really sad every time I realize that I can't play Age of Empires 2 online anymore. because it, you know, it, I don't know, and it's a strange thing, because I can't play strategy games anymore. I can't play them, and it was one of the games that made me.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, there's that, so, you know, the games got it since, we got it in at different periods, of course, apparently. Various systems, too. I think Game Boy, Genesis, Nintendo, TV shows, apparently, N64. technically, part of Jason's answer was Xbox as well, or Xbox 360. Yeah, and then next week we'll have a question. I can pretty much tell you what it is now. It's what
I like
was your
these
first
questions.
Console? And I think Jason already answered it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that will be next week. But for Anthony, who stepped out early, Jason...
Oh, Chad, ooh, I want to say something first before we go.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know if many people know this, but I kind of have, like, tangential involvement in this charity called Frag for Cancer, which is now no longer Frag for Cancer. It's Frag for Charity, because it does more things than just cancer. Yeah. But they're doing this StarCraft tournament that's this Saturday, next Saturday, and then the Saturday after that is the finals. And it's got, I mean, there's a bunch of pro players playing, like TT1, Ostagy, DDE, which if you watch StarCraft, you'll know who they are. So, yeah, I'm just throwing it out there. You can register for the, qualifiers. Obviously not for today, because it's today, and this isn't going to go up today. But for next Saturday, registration will still be open when this goes up. So, yeah, it's just worth checking into. It's a good cause. There's a $5,000 prize pool. And, yo, like,
you like
charities
money, right?
Are cool. Charities are cool, so check it out.
Are you going to...
I think it's the most serious thing I've ever heard you say, Chad.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's, like, going to be pro casters and stuff, like the guy from Pure Pwnage. I forget his name now, which is terrible of me. But Destiny is going to be casting, who... Lots of people will know Destiny if you know anything about this. So, yeah. This is like, I'm good for the year now. This is my good deed for the foreseeable future. So,
for 2012.
So it is.
That's kind of nice.
Just in time for Valentine's Day.
Yes, which I'm sure he's going to spend with his one of alcohol.
Do they celebrate that in Canada? Or in the UK?
Yep. Yes, they do, unfortunately. It's a commercial holiday.
Okay, so now I can rap.
Now you can rap. It's not even Christmas time, so I don't know why you're
rapping. Only if it's the Donkey Kong rap.
Oh, gosh. So this is an episode full of bad puns.
You have 99 problems, and getting interrupted when you're trying to wrap up is one of them.
That was really too long-winded to make sense, but yes, that's it for Two Worlds in episode 57.
To show.